The MMA on the Rocks podcast is intended for adult audiences. If you are not an adult, please do not let your parents know you're listening to this, and don't repeat anything you hear on this show in front of them. Also a reminder that even if you fight recklessly, please drink responsibly. Now that we have all that covered, let's start the show. Welcome to MMA on the Rocks. My name is Bill Welker. You are listening to episode 318 of the podcast, unless you're joining live on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. If you want to catch the show live, subscribe on one or all of those platforms. Turn on your notifications so you know when the show is going live, like right now. Today is Monday, June 19th. For those keeping track, we had a great weekend of fights this weekend. We had a Bellator and UFC. Before we get into that, I hope everybody had a fantastic Father's Day weekend. If you're a father, specifically if you're a father who's, you know, doing the right thing and taking care of your children, I hope you had an awesome, restful, relaxing time with your family, spending time with your kids, and enjoying the day. If you're not taking care of your kids, then I don't really give a shit what you did on Sunday. it was a great weekend for me. The wife planned a little weekend getaway. We went to Orlando, did not go to Disney. That's done and over with, I swear. I feel like an addict every time I talk about Disney. Like, I swear, I'm not going, guys. Not going. But no, the wife found a nice hotel out there. It was like a resort type place called the Gaylord Palms. It's pretty close to I-4 in Orlando. She kind of set it up so we can go and just chill at the resort for the weekend, not have to leave. They had restaurants and everything in there. A little water park in the back. My daughter loved that. They had like a lazy river. It's a different kind of lazy river, though. You don't sit in a tube. You put on like a life jacket, and it just kind of, it wasn't that lazy. It kind of whips you around pretty fast. But my daughter had so much fun with it. She would do like 50 laps in there and not get tired of it at all. So it was a great Father's Day weekend for me, getting to see her have a great time, and then eat some good food and just kind of relax. Usually when we go away, it's nonstop. We're going to theme parks and doing all kinds of stuff. We don't have any time to just sit and relax. So it was nice of the wife to arrange that for this weekend. And the hotel itself is cool because it's set up in like a circle. And everything is indoor. There's like a giant atrium over the entire place. So it's all enclosed in glass. But there's so much greenery inside. You feel like you're outside. But then, you know, when it would rain and stuff, obviously you don't get wet because you're inside an atrium. They had an alligator pond in the middle, like koi ponds kind of going throughout the whole courtyard, which was massive. And then they had ponds with these giant tarpon in them. They must have been like 3 feet long. And I enjoy stuff like that. I enjoy looking at the scenery and the architecture and stuff like that. So I spent quite a bit of time just kind of wandering around the property. Saturday night to watch the fights. I was hoping to find a place to have a cigar and watch the fights. And obviously, since the hotel is technically indoors, you can't smoke anywhere. And it was raining cats and dogs on Saturday night. But I wound up finding a covered area over by the convention center, and was able to sit there and watch a majority of the fights on my phone. I guess we got some breaking news. Thanks to my buddy, Matt Temple. It looks like Henry Cejudo is booked against Marlon Chito Vera August 19th. All right. So that's a big one. You know, Chito is coming off of that pretty one-sided beating loss to Corey Sandhagen. And of course, Cejudo coming off the loss to the champ, Aljamain Sterling. That'll be an interesting one. Whoever loses that one is going to be set way back. But that's an interesting fight for sure. Let's get into UFC. So UFC Vegas 75 this weekend, if you're keeping track, middleweight contenders, Jared Cannonier and Marvin Vettori. What a fight this was. The pace that these guys fought at was unreal. They both got knocked down. They were both in big trouble at some point in the fight, more so Marvin. It was a fantastic fight, very back and forth in the beginning, and then Jared Cannonier kind of put his foot on the gas and ran away with it. The first round, it looked like Marvin Vettori was going to run away with it because he knocked down Jared two or three times, and he did the right thing, stayed patient. And what happened, in my opinion, was Jared Cannonier came out fighting southpaw because he wanted to attack the lead leg of Marvin Vettori, who's also a southpaw. And it's just really difficult to hit those outside leg kicks or those calf kicks when you're going orthodox against southpaw. It was a great strategy, but the problem with that is, and this is a problem that I have personally, I've been told that I hit a little bit harder southpaw from people who hold pads for me and stuff like that. But the problem is it kind of disorients you in terms of your defense because you're changing which hand is your lead hand. Your reaction time is just thrown off a little bit unless you get really used to it. And I think that was the case for Jared Cannonier. He seemed like you know, his offense looked good from southpaw, but he just didn't see the shots coming in time from that stance, and he wasn't able to react in the right amount of time. And it didn't help that Marvin came out super aggressive in that first round. So that's why he was able to drop Jared a few times in that first round and damn near put him away. Marvin was swinging for the fences, but he stayed calm, stayed composed. He didn't want to rush in because he knows how dangerous Jared is. Showed him that respect, and in doing so, kind of gave him time to recover. Jared then kind of knocked Marvin down a few times in the second round. Second and third round were kind of blowouts for Jared Cannonier. I thought the fourth round was pretty close. And I could see an argument even for giving it to Marvin Vettori, which would have made it even going into that fifth round. Turns out that wouldn't have mattered anyway, because Jared Cannonier just, you know, put the pedal to the metal and poured on a pace that Marvin Vettori just couldn't keep up with. Credit to Marvin Vettori, man. What a fucking chin on that guy. You have to respect the toughness of him. Never been finished. Jared Cannonier breaking the record for most significant strikes landed in a middleweight contest. And, you know, Marvin Vettori ate all those punches. So just a great fight. You know, will they go ahead and put Cannonier in there with Adesanya again? I don't know, man. It got a reaction from the champ. He tweeted, quote unquote, bro, ellipses right after the fight. So I guess he was impressed, with the fight or with, Cannonier's performance, but man, it's kind of hard at middleweight right now because it was so exciting for a little while when we had Alex Pereira come in and bring a little parity to the division. But now that he's gone back to 205, we're kind of left with the division that Adesanya has cleaned out. So, yeah, I mean, would I watch Cannonier and Adesanya again? Yeah. But if you think of it this way, he just broke the record for most significant strikes landed. He barely touched Adesanya when they fought. So, obviously Cannonier has been working on more output, but I mean, if you're having more output and you're still not hitting a guy, that's a problem. So, man, it's tough because he put on such a great performance in a main event against a really tough guy, Marvin Vettori, and I'm not so sure, he's going to get the payoff he's looking for. So, I think we're going to have to see what happens with, is it Whitaker and Du Plessis that's fighting soon? Pretty sure it is. We're gonna have to see what happens there because if Dricus du Plessis can somehow get past Robert Whittaker, then we're gonna have to see him in Adesanya because there's just so much bad blood there. But other than that, I don't know. I don't know what's next. I think Marvin Vettori didn't really lose any stock here. He may have even gained a few fans with the toughness he showed on Saturday night. So, either one of these guys really in a bad spot after this one, but it's just so hard to put either one of them back in there with Adesanya after what he did to them both. So it's almost like what were they fighting for here? And just out of curiosity, let me pull up the rankings. UFC middleweight rankings. See what we're looking at here in terms of what could be next. All right, so they still have Alex Padilla ranked as a number one contender. Then you have Whitaker and you have Vettori, then you have Cannonier. Obviously, they're gonna flip after Saturday. You have Paulo Costa, who knows what's going on with him. You have Du Plessis, who's gonna get in there with Whitaker, I believe. And then you have Sean Strickland, who is also fighting soon. Against, I think, an unranked opponent. So, yeah. And then you still got Derek Brunson floating around in there. You have to go pretty far down the list to find somebody, that Adesanya hasn't fought yet. You'd have to get down to, well, he hasn't fought Strickland, but Strickland just lost. He hasn't fought Du Plessis, but Du Plessis doesn't have enough wins to get in there for the belt yet. You got to go down to like 9 and 10, Roman Dolidze and Jack Hermanson. Then you got Kelvin Gastelum hanging out at number 11. Shit, I wouldn't mind seeing Kelvin Gastelum and Adesanya again. That was one of the best fights ever. I would definitely enjoy watching that again. But yeah, this main event was insane. I can't believe for guys as big as them, who are both big middleweights. I mean, Jared Cannonier has fought at heavyweight, and Marvin didn't look a whole lot smaller than him. The fact that they fought at this pace for 25 minutes is just unbelievable. So I thought it was a fantastic fight. Armand Sarukyan gets Joaquin Silva out of there in the third round. Took him down and just pounded him out. Had a little bit more trouble with Silva than probably a lot of people would have thought. But credit to Sarukyan. He had to take this fight on short notice as well. He said, nobody will get in there with him. He really wants to rematch with Islam. It's just a tough sell, man, because yeah, Saryukian's ranked number 8. He may move up a little bit after that performance, but there's just so many people in line ahead of him. Charles Oliveira just had the big win last weekend, and you have Poirier and Gaethje. Like, good luck beating out either one of those guys for a title shot. You got Michael Chandler floating around in there. Who knows what's going to happen with him? you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they just threw Chandler in there with Makhachev. Michael Chandler and Rafael Fiziev would be an awesome fight, I think. I'd like to see that one. If Fiziev is all healed up from the beating he took from Justin Gaethje. You know what? Armand Saryukian and Michael Chandler would be a really fun fight as well. Let's see. Rick Allen says, nobody cares about Cannonier, though, and he will never beat Israel, so he won't be getting a title shot again. Yeah, that's pretty much what I said. Except I didn't say nobody cares about Jared Cannonier. I think he's still fun to watch fight. Rick, I'm starting to believe you're not even a fan of MMA. I don't think you've had a nice thing to say about a single fighter. All right, what else we got here? So, yeah, I say let's do Armand Saryukian and Michael Chandler, because I don't think the Conor McGregor fight's going to happen. I think everybody pretty much knows that fight's not going to happen. I haven't been watching any of the Ultimate Fighter, so I don't know what's going on with that. I guess they're generating a little bit of buzz, but I haven't seen a highlight clip anywhere. I haven't seen headlines from the show. I haven't seen anything. So I'm just going on the assumption that Michael Chandler and Conor McGregor will not be fighting. So let's see. Saryukian and Chandler. Let's put those two together. I think that's a fantastic fight. Lots of fun. All right. Oh, Rick Allen said he has always had good things to say about Charles DuBronx Oliveira. And he will get the title again. He very well could. All right. Armin Petrosian and Christian Leroy Duncan. This fight was fun in the first round until Petrosian kind of realized that Christian Duncan was just going to keep going for those spinning attacks. And all he did was kind of sit back a little bit outside of the pocket. And that's pretty much all you have to do against spinning attacks. You just have to lay back a little bit or, you know, crowd them. You know, if you're crowding somebody, they can't get off those spinning attacks. So Petrosian kind of held back, and then he would shoot into the pocket with a lot of straight punches, pretty much straight boxing, and just shut down all those spinning attacks of Duncan, and then started implementing some grappling a little later in the fight. It was a good performance against a guy in Christian Duncan who I believe was undefeated going into this. Or maybe he had one loss. Let me pull it up real quick. Yeah, he was undefeated. But, you know, I've always believed that the basics win fights. The flashy stuff, the spinning heel kicks and the axe kicks and all of that, they look really cool. But it just gets to be too easy to time at the higher level. And it becomes too easy to avoid at the highest levels. They're a little bit easier to see coming. Although Christian Duncan, man, he threw some of those spinning attacks with such ferocity and such speed. He was interesting to watch, but I think he just wore himself out throwing all that stuff. I would love to see him go into his next fight and just fight with just a little bit more kind of rudimentary tactics, you know, see if he could get in there and just straight box and kick box. It looked like his takedown defense was decent, but then he started to get tired. Pat Sabatini with a one-sided beating of Lucas Almeida, just dragged him to the ground in the first round, beat the hell out of him. Almeida barely made it out of that round, and then the second round started, and Sabatini just dragged him right back to the ground again, was beating him up quite a bit, and then wound up grabbing the arm triangle and getting the tap about 2 minutes into the second round. Dominant performance by Pat Sabatini. He looked really, really sharp in this fight. Wrestling looked great. Ground and pound was awesome. And I think that's quite a few in a row for Pat Sabatini. Let's see. Oh, no, he has a loss to Damon Jackson. But before that, he was on quite a winning streak, 6 in a row. But, yeah, we saw a man on fire in Pat Sabatini. Probably the most one-sided fight on the card, I would say. Before that, Manuel Torres with an elbow knockout of Nicolas Mata. If you guys didn't see this, this was one of the most vicious elbow knockouts I've ever seen. He put that elbow straight to the back of Mata's skull. So if you're just listening to the podcast and you did not watch the fights, go catch the highlight of this one, Manuel Torres with the elbow knockout over Nicolas Mata. And then in another case of someone not having success with spinning attacks, Muslim Salikov loses a unanimous decision to Nicholas Dalby. I was kind of surprised with the way this one went, to be honest. Nicholas Dalby looked really good. He had great pressure. He was kind of doing the opposite of what Petrosian did to deal with the spinning attacks. He was crowding and pressuring Muslim Salikov, so he couldn't get any of those off. Comes away with the unanimous decision win. Alessandro Costa with the TKO over Jimmy Flick. 1 minute into the second round. The story of this fight, Costa was really eating up Jimmy Flick's legs with the calf kicks and made it hard for him to move around. And, you know, Jimmy fell down due to a few of those kicks and was trying to get Costa to come to the ground with him. Finally did follow him to the ground and just elbowed the shit out of him until he was basically unconscious, but not totally. So great performance by Alessandro Costa. Kyung-ho Kang made quick work of Christian Quinones. This dude just came out and looked damn near flawless. He got hit with one big shot, but came back with a big shot of his own, put Quinones down, and just snatched his neck with the rear naked choke. It was tight, like right off the bat. You could tell that Quinones was not going to be able to escape fairly immediately. 2 minutes, 25 seconds into round number one, rear naked choke for Kyung-ho Kang. Who looked very, very good in that fight. Carlos Hernandez and Dennis Bondar. This was one of two fights that ended a little bit weird. So Hernandez was controlling most of the fight. Bondar may have won the first round, but it was close. Hernandez won the second two for sure. Technically, TKO'd Bondar at the end of the third round, 4 minutes and 59 seconds. He hit him with a nice throw, landed on top of him, and they kind of clashed heads. He TKOs him with just a few seconds left. Referee Jaron Vallel calls the fight off, and then they go to the booth review, and they determined that there was a clash of heads. I guess they're calling it at 4 minutes, 59 seconds of the third round. So instead of Hernandez getting the TKO victory, they judge the fight up to that point, which is pretty much the whole fight. It turns out that Hernandez won anyway, but it was a weird set of circumstances, man, because if Bondar had been up on the scorecards and this happened and Hernandez thinks he just got a TKO victory and it gets taken away from him because of the official review or whatever it is they're calling it, that would have been a shitty situation for him, you know, if it was like a sort of thing where he came from behind and got a TKO and then it gets taken away from him because he accidentally, you know, clashed heads with the guy. That would suck. Let's just make headbutts legal. Let's just go for broke here. Teresa Bleda, unanimous decision over Gabriela Fernandez. This was just a case of Gabriela Fernandez's grappling getting exposed. You know, we know she's a great striker. Teresa just wasn't having it, didn't want to stay on the feet with her. She just held her down, beat her up for 3 rounds. And you know, if Fernandez doesn't work on that grappling, this career is not going to go well. She should just go into kickboxing or something like that, because you know, she was fully mounted and just not doing anything to try and elbow escape or even really try and buck Bleda off. She just kind of accepted the position. And that's a really dangerous thing when people are hitting you in the face. Here is the other unfortunate fight of the night, Dan Argueta and Ronnie Lawrence. So Argueta was being pretty dominant in this fight for as long as it lasted. He had, I believe, two different submission attempts on Ronnie Lawrence. The second one was a really tight guillotine. They rolled over and Argueta wound up on top with the guillotine still locked in. It looked like Ronnie Lawrence was about to tap, and then the referee, Keith Peterson, it seemed like fell into him or accidentally touched his hand. And when Ronnie Lawrence went to pull his hand away, it tapped Argueta's butt. So Keith Peterson called it a tap out to the guillotine and stopped the fight. And Ronnie Lawrence is like, what's going on here? I didn't tap, even though he was very clearly ready to tap. Like he had the hand cocked and loaded, and was going to tap out any second. Unfortunately, Keith Peterson touched his hand, and when Ronnie Lawrence pulled it away, it looked like a tap, and Keith Peterson called the fight off. Then they went to the booth review. So Keith Peterson fucked up there, which Dominic Cruz was having a field day with, of course, because he hates Keith Peterson. We all remember when Keith Peterson refereed Dominic Cruz's fight with Henry Cejudo, and Dominic didn't like the stoppage, so he said that Keith Peterson smelled like alcohol and cigarettes while he was in the cage. I'm sure we all remember that. So anytime Keith Peterson makes a mistake, Dominic Cruz is sure to jump all over him for it. Because, you know, there's bad blood. Credit to Keith Peterson. He went and he reviewed his decision and reversed it. So this fight was called a no contest. It's most unfortunate for Dan Argueta. Let's be honest, Ronnie Lawrence probably benefited from this call, because it seemed like there was no way he was winning that fight. He seemed totally outclassed in that 2 minutes and 20 seconds that this fight lasted. A few more seconds in that guillotine, he would have been tapping for real. So Argueta is really the one who got screwed over by this mistake by Keith Peterson, because he could have had a submission victory on his record in the UFC. Now he's got a no contest. You know, he's going to know, and the people who saw this fight are going to know, that he was dominant and he was the better fighter that night. But that's not going to mean anything, because this was a fight night card. It was the second fight on the card. You know, there's not a whole lot of people who saw it. So it's just going to go in the books as a no contest, and that's that. Then Modestus Bukauskas and Zach Pauga. I still don't understand why this was the first fight on the card. They put on a great show at light heavyweight. Bukauskas coming away with the unanimous decision. Overall, I thought this was a great fight night card. I thought it was a lot of fun. We had some great submissions. We had some controversy with the referees. We had, you know, some headbutts. We had some dominant grappling. We had, you know, a main event that was just an incredible pace for middleweights. We had a record-breaking performance from Jared Cannonier. It was just a really fun card to watch. You know, it wasn't that great on paper, but you know, sometimes those are the ones that are the best. Let's take a quick look at Bellator. So in the main event, Vadim Nemkov wins a unanimous decision over 46-year-old Yoel Romero. It's insane that Yoel Romero still looks the way he looks at 46 years old. The guy is just a freak of nature. It's a shame because he's had so many opportunities to fight for a title, lost a few of them, you know, on the scale. I think twice, what was it, twice he missed weight for his title shots against Robert Whittaker. So that's going to be it for him. But, you know, Vadim Nemkov pretty much beat the shit out of Yoel Romero. Romero came back and I guess won the fifth round, but he was looking pretty worse for wear at the end of this one. Nemkov only 30 years old. Hasn't lost a fight since April of 2016. He has a loss to Yuri Prochazka over in Ryzen. But other than that, and other than a no contest with Corey Anderson, also due to a clash of heads, because that's just the theme of the night, I guess. Let's see. He's got one, two. If we don't count the Corey Anderson, because he beat Corey in the rematch anyway. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11 fights in a row. I wonder if he's going to move up and challenge Ryan Bader, because Bader's the heavyweight champion and he's got a knockout win over him. So, you know, why not go for the second belt, fight him at heavyweight? So that's that. Nemkov, very underrated fighter, I think. Then, I think to a lot of people's surprise, Sergio Pettis defending his bantamweight title against Patricio Pitbull, who is moving down to try to become a three-division champion. He's already won the lightweight championship and the featherweight championship, so he was going for a third, but Patricio's got to be getting up there. He's got to be damn near 40. Oh, he's 35. The guy's just been fighting forever. He's got like the Jose Aldo effect. I remember Jose had like 400 fights and he was like, I thought he was 50 and he was like 29 at one point. So yeah, Pettis looked good in that fight. And then Corey Anderson split decision win over Phil Davis in a close fight. Corey edged it out. And then we don't need to talk about the rest of this card. So it's Bellator. But those three fights are good. I have no idea who most of these people are. So, yeah. We'll just skip all that. Let's take a look. Next week, UFC on ABC number 5. And this is going to be in Jacksonville, Florida. No, I won't be going to this card. Jacksonville is about a 5-hour drive for me. Yeah, I don't think I'll be doing that, but I'll be watching because this main event's going to be really good here. I mean, Josh Emmett coming off the loss to Yair Rodriguez, but before that, if you look at the win streak he was on, Calvin Kattar, Dan Ige, Shane Burgos, Mirsad Bektik, and Michael Johnson, you know, with a bunch of knockouts in there. Emin is known for the big knockout power, but he hasn't had a knockout win in just about 4 years. That was kind of like the X factor for anyone fighting Josh Emin for a while. Like, he has just that crazy power. And, but we haven't seen it in a long time. You know, they say power is the last thing to go. But, you know, it's been absent for a while. And across the cage, you have Ilya Topuria, who is just on a tear. Made quick work of Bryce Mitchell in his last fight. And Bryce looked like, you know, he was about to make a run for it. You know, it looked like he was looking to go on a title run, and Topuria just smashed him. Also has great knockout power, a little bit more well-rounded. I would say Josh Emmett may have the better wrestling, but you know, Topuria is just great everywhere. It'll be difficult for Topuria to get Emmett down. He may be able to. Even though he hasn't had a knockout in 4 years, Emmett still has that kind of power where, you know, if Topuria slips up one time and gets touched, you know, that's it. It's lights out. But, you know, Topuria just fights so tight. He's so good everywhere. I think this main event, to me, it seems like it's set up to be a showcase for Ilya Topuria to get a win over another ranked opponent. Let me just take it to a look at the rankings real quick here. So we got Emmett is ranked number 5. Topuria is ranked number 9. Yeah, so they're looking to boost Topuria up here and get him into that top 5. And then there's going to be some really interesting fights for him up there. For Josh Emmett, it's going to be quite a setback if he loses this one. 38 years old. You know, that'll be 2 losses in a row to top competition. Yeah, he's going to be knocked down, probably out of the top 10 if he loses this one. Co-main event, Amanda Ribas and Macy Barber. Macy Barber has been on a pretty good win streak here. 4 in a row. Last fight, somewhat controversial split decision over Andrea Lee. That one was judged a little weird. She's been in fairly close fights, but she's been getting her hand raised. Her last loss was to the current champ, Alexa Grasso. And before that, the fight with Roxanne Mataferi, where she tore her ACL, but even if she didn't, she was losing that fight handily. But yeah, quite a streak she's been on. Miranda Maverick, Montana De La Rosa, Jessica Eye, and then Andrea Lee in her last 4 fights. She's getting in there with Amanda Ribas. Little hot and cold lately. Just fought in March with a win over Viviana Araújo. Then a close decision loss to Caitlin Jukagian before that. Beat Virna Jandiroba. And got TKO'd by Marina Rodriguez. So in their last 4 fights, Macy Barber's looking a little bit better. But you know, they're both solid everywhere. This should be a good competitive fight, I think. Austin Lane and Justin Taffa, that should be a really good fight. Here's one I'm looking at. Brendan Allen and Bruno Silva. You know, this is one. Both of these guys have knockout power. I think Brendan Allen might be a little bit more well-rounded. Bruno Silva might have a little bit more power, but this is my sleeper pick right here, guys. This is the fight I'm looking to keep an eye on, as well as the one right before it, which is going to be Philip Rowe and Neil Magny. This is a great fight that I haven't heard anybody talk about. Phil Rowe, I believe, has not been very active lately. Yeah, he fought Nico Price back in December. But he's on a 3-fight win streak. And Neil Magny, coming off the loss to Gilbert Burns, that was in January. So I guess they've been out of action about the same amount of time. But this should be a fun fight. I would love to see this one go to the ground. They both have really good grappling. Phil Rowe fights out of Fusion, I believe. Yeah, Fusion XL, that which is in Orlando, Florida, under Julian Williams over there. Good gym. Let's see. Tabitha Ricci against Jillian Robertson. That should be good. I don't know if you guys heard Jillian Robertson on Joe Rogan recently, but she just got on there. Pretty interesting interview. I wouldn't go ahead and listen to the whole thing. Maybe look for some clips. She had some interesting things to say. And then this fight, I believe, so Zalgas Zhumagulov, most of you know one of my favorite names to say, rocking this Beatles haircut. Look at this picture here. Sorry for those of you audio only. This looks like this picture looks like if they made a movie where Rob Schneider was going to play an MMA fighter, they would probably make him look exactly like Zalgas Zhumagulov with this haircut, this like Beatles, like Liverpool haircut he's got here. And just like, he just looks funny, man. But the guy can fight. Three losses in a row, though. But they were, the last two were close. They were both split decisions. So he's fighting Joshua Van, who is making his UFC debut, riding a 5-fight win streak. All right. I will always tune in for Rob Schneider, Zalgas Zhumagulov. That should be fun. Nothing else really jumping out to me. Cody Brundage in the first fight, taking on Cedric Dumas, who is having his second fight in the UFC. Made his UFC debut, got submitted by Josh Fremd back in March. So we'll see how that goes. Yeah, but overall, it's going to be a fun card. I'm really interested in this main event. So I'll be tuning in. I don't know about you guys. Like I said, I hope everybody had a great Father's Day weekend. Even if you're not a father, hope you had to got to spend some quality time with your father. If he's still alive and in your life, hope everybody had a great time. Get a little relaxation in. I personally was able to come across my favorite bourbon. I always go back and forth on this, but I'd say for right now, it's my favorite bourbon. Old Forester single barrel strength. This particular bottle, they come out every year. And then there's different batches. This one was made just for the state of Florida. So it's 126.4 proof, which is about 63% alcohol. I love Old Forester, one of my favorite distilleries. But this bottle in particular, it just kind of hits different. It's got all the great tasting notes that you love from Old Forester, the dark cherry, the vanilla finish, but they're just a little bit more intense. It's got a nice long finish to it. It's really complex. It drinks really easy for 126 proof bourbon. I think another one of the bottles I had back there was 130 something. And after I got about a third of the way through that bottle, it really opened up and really smoothed out. And it's just got such a rich, well-rounded flavor. I was able to grab one of these 2 days before Father's Day. They randomly had it at a liquor store by me. So I said, "Hey, Bill, happy Father's Day to you." And I bought it for myself. A little bit of a higher price tag, but I figured, if I'm going to splurge on a bottle, and when I say a higher price tag, it's for like $100. So if you're looking to add like a really nice bottle to your collection that you only open up on special occasions. I highly recommend the Old Forester single barrel if you can come across it. It's only the second time I've ever found one in a store. And last year I found one. I was upstate a little bit in Brooksville, Florida. I don't know if you guys remember this or not. I was building the patio cover in my backyard. I talked about it pretty frequently. So I had to go up to Brooksville, about an hour north of here, made a weekend of it with the family. I had to go pick up the roof panels for the patio cover. And I went to this random bar called the Florida Cracker that we always try to go to when we visit up there, just kind of like a dive bar, but they have good food and a good beer selection. They were randomly selling bottles of liquor. They had an Old Forester single barrel. I think they had a Woodford Reserve barrel pick and one other thing. And they had like matching cigars to go with all of them. So I grabbed the Old Forester. It was $125 there, but I'd never seen one in the wild. So I grabbed it. Also my Father's Day gift to myself last year. But yeah, that's the only other time I've ever seen it. So if you come across it and you know you're into good whiskey and you want to spend the money, grab it. If not, you know, wait till you're at a restaurant or something, get yourself a little 2 ounce pour of it, try it out and see for yourself. You know, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, but I enjoy it. I think if you like the other Old Forester expressions, like the 1920, the 1910, the bonded, if you like any of those, then you'll definitely enjoy the single barrel if you happen to come across it. What else? I heard Chael Sonnen and Cowboy Cerrone are in a movie together. I need to see it. Has anybody seen it? Leave me a comment and let me know. Even if it's horrible, I still plan to see it. I saw a clip of it and Chael Sonnen was dropping some F-bombs, which I found interesting because, you know, the man doesn't like to curse. Well, I don't think I ever heard him use too many four-letter words, which made his trash talk that much better when he was fighting, because he would get guys so flustered without ever even using any bad language, which is pretty impressive if you think about it. If you guys want to grab some MMA on the Rocks merchandise, you can do so. Reaper1.co is the website. I'll put all the links in the show notes as always. You can use the promo code MMARocks10. Save yourself 10% on your entire order, whether you are ordering my merchandise or not. You can still use the promo code because I love you guys. See how much I do for you? But no, they have some great stuff, great rash guards, gear bags. You can support some fighters. Every time you buy a fighter t-shirt, it puts money right in their pocket. You know, just like buying my merchandise puts money in my pocket, but full disclosure, I'm going to spend it on alcohol. so you could choose whether you want to be an enabler or not. In any case, I appreciate everything. I see all the comments. I see all the reviews. I see every time people, you guys share the episode. I appreciate all of it. I just noticed that you can leave comments on individual episodes on Spotify now. So I'm trying to set up a way to get those notifications in real time. So I don't have to go in and manually check the comments, but I do see them. I do appreciate them. And I appreciate you telling your friends and family about this show. Not your kids. It's not a kid-friendly show. But other than that, thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks for everything. Thanks for all the criticism, too. I enjoy that as well. You know, I do take it to heart when people criticize the show. You know, I listen, and I'll see if I can make some improvements. I'm not bothered by it. You know, if there's nothing I can improve upon, then I'll just ignore it. But that's all I got. So until next time, cheers, everybody. Bye.